So another translation for the title, the Concordance Sounds Collection of Verse Commentaries, might be verse commentaries sung together in harmony. So today I'd like to look at case 37, which is also case 44 from the Gateless Gate. It reads like this. The priest Ba Zhou of Zhang Zhao entered the hall and, holding up his staff, said to the assembly, "If you have a staff, I will give you a staff. If you have no staff, I'll take a staff from you." Then, leaning on his staff, he descended from his seat. Miao Zung wrote, "When Bia Zhou raised up his staff, everything in the cosmos was startled. Frogs may have leapt all the way to India, but his eyebrows still rest above his eyes." And Bao Chur wrote, "When Bao Zhou lifted up his staff, everything in the world lost its nerve. If I had grabbed it and snapped it in half, what then would he have had to lean on?" So Ba Zhou entered the Dharma hall and lifted a staff. This is the same staff, the Dharma staff, that Yun Men lifted and said, "This staff has become a dragon. It has swallowed up the whole universe, the mountains, rivers, and great earth. Where are they to be found?" The hermit of Lotus Flower Peak also had this staff. He took it up before his assembly and said, "Why didn't the old ancestors remain here after they reached it?" He himself answered, saying, "It has no power for the way." Again he said, "After all, what is it?" And he himself answered, saying, "Carrying my staff across my shoulders, going to the 1,000, going to the 10,000 peaks." So what is this staff? Bao Zhou said, "If you have a staff, I'll give you a staff. If you have no staff, I will take a staff from you." The staff was initially carried by both monks and nuns as they wandered from monastery to monastery or hermitage to hermitage. It helped them stay balanced over the rocky, uneven terrain. It let them gauge the depths and shallows of the creeks and rivers they needed to cross. And it aided them in sweeping away any critters they might come across on the way. It was usually 5 to 7 feet long and was uneven in appearance. Every Zen teacher had a staff that he or she cut for herself, taking it from the heart of the mountains, taking it from the heart of the wild. This is an untamed path that we walk. Unlike other traditions and religions, it comes without a map. So, of course, we get lost. So, of course, we wander in circles, we backtrack, and we become afraid, or despairing, or frustrated. But this is the natural way of the wild. It strips us all that we think is necessary until all that is left is what we actually are and are not. Many times, of course, we wish, we plead and we cry for a map, for some direction, for some known landmarks. But fortunately, those are withheld. They aren't withheld from malice or unkindness, but because the old worthies knew, if given a map, we'd readily confuse that for the thing itself. They knew with a map and direction, we'd miss the smell of lupin and fireweed. They knew we'd forget to hear the singular call of the hermit thrush or the almost lost spotted owl. They knew we'd rush by the flowing creeks and roaring rivers rather than entering the way right there. They knew we'd be so immersed staring at our iMaps, Androids, and smartphones that we wouldn't see the smile of the crooked old lady crossing in front of us. The staff comes from the wild, from the untrammeled and unbidden, which is right here, below, or right here before. It is right here before our patterned thoughts and feelings arise. It's right here before our anemic notions and conventions, or our storied ways of making things right and wrong, good and bad and moral and immoral arise. And yet, to just walk in the wild isn't enough. The wild itself demands that we take one more step. The step out of the wild and back into that which we came from. Although this example is of another terrain, many of Shakespeare's plays start in civilization. They start in the palace, in the town, and in the nuclear family. And they move for transformation and shape-shifting into the wild. The transformation, however, is not complete or resolved until a return to where one started, the place in some sense that was never actually left, was re-entered. As I just said, once we relinquish and let go, or let go into, it isn't enough to stay. We need to put the staff on our shoulders and walk through the peaks and valleys of our lives and of the lives of our friends and neighbors and of the lives of this world in the way that it is and not in the way we think it should be. Dogen wrote, "If the Dharma has not yet fully come into one's body-mind, one thinks it is already sufficient. On the other hand, if the Dharma fills one's body-mind, there is a sense of insufficiency. When we are sure, when we self-ascertain and know that we have or don't have, a certain complacency sets in, a smugness almost. We feel so clear about where we stand and why. We forget that the back of our neck is unknown to us. We, in a sense, ignore all that is outside of our attention, our insight, our clarity, and our mindfulness. When we settle into Zazen, when we settle into Mu and into who hears, it overwhelms our comprehension. It undercuts the stability and the ground we've created to carry our narratives and stories. Zazen overwhelms our comprehension and what we imagine is of a value and of importance and of necessity." And as I said earlier, when referencing the wild, which is Zazen, it takes away what we think we need and gives us what is actually necessary. This allowing of Zazen takes a great faith, and it takes also its etymological relative, courage. To allow ourselves to feel, insufficient goes against so much that is inculcated in our civilized hearts for many reasons, rational and irrational, fathomable and not. We want to appear a certain way. But if we can just continue to return to Zazen, if we can continue to return to Mu and to who hears, if we can just continue to sit and walk and stand and lie down with open hands, our faith and courage will open the way. It will open the door to not knowing. And our practice, the discipline of Zazen, will hold us in our sense of insufficiency. It will hold us in our sense of inadequacy and in our inability to truly know what is before us. What is before thought and ideas. It'll hold us to what is before right and wrong, and what is before eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Miao Zung wrote, and I'm now using a translation other than Beata Grant's. She wrote, "When Biao Zhou raised his staff, it startled the entire universe. Even frogs and toads flew past Nirvana. Yet his eyebrows are still above his eyes." Why would raising a staff startle each and everything in the universe? How is that even possible? What is Miao Zung saying? Aiken Roshi said, without that staff, Buddhism would be empty formulations and empty moral injunctions. It not only enhances the doctrine, it is the doctrine. Please, however, do not knock formulations and injunctions. They trace the configurations of the great fact. Raising the staff is like the coming cold with snow nearby, after weeks and weeks of mild, wet skies of clouds. With the coming of winter bones, the horses, the coyotes, the elk and bears pause and look up. All thoughts and ideas fall away, and with that raising of the staff, there is only the slight shivering of mammal skin delighting in anticipation of the cold, in anticipation of the snow, in anticipation of falling away, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Yet with the staff raised, the anticipation is not about the past or future. The anticipation itself is it. The cold itself, it. The delight itself, it. And the running for warmth, too, it. This is the gate of joy and liberation. And the world itself responds. And remember, this staff was neither fashioned in a conventional way nor influenced by market demands. This staff is crooked and twisted. It is ragged and ridged. It is precise and unique. And it is personal and functional in a rather lovely way that at times defies the norm. It is, after all, of the wild, just as you are of that very same place. And this staff has some interesting qualities. One being that it can plumb the depths and shallows of the river about to be crossed. It can do that too with the person sitting across from you on the bus. And it knows the depths and shallows of this teisho. Again, though, because this staff is wild in origin, it does not define depth and shallow the way most might. For instance, is Zazen deep and Kinhin shallow? How about the crow and the raven? Which one is deep and which shallow? How about the wildcat or the coyote, or him sitting across from you, or her? How about a black person or yellow, or a Muslim or a Christian? The staff sees the world with its eyes, not ours. So the staff knows shallows and depths and startles when it is raised. But that isn't all. When it's raised, even frogs and toads fly past nirvana. They go beyond nirvana, beyond Buddhas and patriarchs, beyond delusion and enlightened. And yet, even though Bao Zhou raised the staff, creating waves when there was no wind, he didn't lose his eyebrows. It is said that if a master preaches false dharma, his or her eyebrows would fall out. What do you think? With his, if you have a staff, I'll give you a staff, and if you don't, I'll take it away. Did he keep his eyebrows? I personally think he lost not only his eyebrows, but he lost his eyeballs, his nose, his ears, and his throat. And I think it is our good fortune that he also lost his body and his mind. A few hundred years after Miao Zung wrote her verse, Bao Chu wrote, and again I'm using an alternate translation, she wrote, when Ba Xiu raised his walking staff, the entire universe was terrified. But she says, if I snatched the stick from him and broke it, what would be left for you to rely on? So again, we have the echo of the staff that in another time was a twirling flower, and then a raised finger, and then a ringing bell, a shout, and a pebble striking bamboo. These are all echoes of the experience that Shakyamuni Buddha had when he looked up at the morning star last night, about 14 hours ago. So Ba Xiu lifted his staff in the universe, and each thing everywhere was terrified. As Zazen overwhelms you, when it overwhelms your comprehension, when it annihilates your preconceived notions, when it makes clear that you do not know where you've come from or are going or really at the bottom who you are. The ground you've created to sustain you begins to feel shaky and unsound. You begin to feel unstable and anxious because this raised staff has become a dragon. And it wants to kill the idea of you. It wants to kill any notions of a substantial, independent, permanent self. And this can feel, at least momentarily, quite terrifying. We look sometimes to retreat, but then realize we have gone too far, and it is too late for backing away. This state of mind, I imagine, had at some point been Bao Chu's. She, however, stood her ground or became comfortable with no ground, so was able to advance and say, yes, all are terrified and I'm terrified, but what if I move forward? What if I maintain my faith in Zazen? What if I maintain my faith in the schedule and in the ancestors, and ultimately in my own karma, which is my life? What if I maintain my faith and instead snatch the staff and break it in two? Then what? Bao Chu must have been a strong and exquisite teacher, not allowing anyone to rely on anything at all. If you have a staff, I'll give you a staff. If you don't, I'll take it away. Then what do you do? When you don't have even a staff, or a finger, or a twirling flower, then what? When everything is taken away, this is entering the wild with open hands and trusting, and trusting, and trusting. So I wanted to thank you all for listening, and I wanted to thank you for Sesshin, which is nothing other than you and I sitting together with great faith, trusting that there is something unknown to all of us, and it is yearning for our return to the original dwelling. So, thank you all.